When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Welcome into another episode of Hockey Royalty Live, the official podcast of HockeyRoyalty.com. Today, we're going to be talking about the rookie faceoff, Vilardi's contract, and the goalie discussion, where the Kings are right now and maybe how they should plan for the future. Get in the chat, like and subscribe, hit that notification button, and let's go. Man, well, before we get started, I just always want to appreciate you guys for coming in here and listening to this. Please hit that like button like a Martin Furk slap shot. We'll get this thing going here. But before, how is my co-host doing? We had a week off. Both you guys had a little vacay. Joe, how was your week?
Good. Spent some time. We drove to Connecticut with the family. Took the boys to they had an aquarium out in the place that we went, which was nice. They got a chance to see some big whales out in Connecticut, which was fun. Took them to a big dinosaur place. So a lot of fun for the kids. So they're at the age where we're like, do we do this? Do we do the Disney trip? They're 4 and 2. And it's like, they're still a little young and we're tossing around the idea next year. And so we walked around like the aquarium one day and then the dinosaur place the other. I'm like, this is
like a trial run, right?
Yeah, this is like, I told her, I said, this is a fraction, like fraction of what Disney is. So we may need to like rethink this because it was a grind at times, but it was good. It was good. How you guys doing?
I'm doing good. Just been enjoying the California summer out here. It's been getting a little warm, enjoying the beaches, you know, same old, just missing some hockey is all.
Yeah.
So is Connor Bedard and Evander Kane, you know, lighting up beer leagues and roller inline skating leagues left and right. So they're enjoying that as well. With the week off, I've just been diving headfirst into the fantasy football. I'm up to like, I don't know, like 8 leagues now doing best ball. I'm bored, you know, so doing that, planning my vacation, you know, finally pulled the trigger there. So I'll be headed to Europe in October. It'll be unfortunate. I'll miss the beginning of the season here for the Kings, but definitely be excited for that. Seeing Spain and Portugal. So if anybody has any recommendations, throw it in the DMs here on Twitter at RandomCommando24, and I'll try to look at those up. But before we get started on the topics, Nav's in here. Like and share. Thank you, Nav. Appreciate that. Let's go, boys. Shank Master, let's go. It's time to talk some Kings hockey. And Nav is kind of upset, Joe, that you didn't give him a little invite. I don't know if it got lost in the mail or what's going on, but he would have liked to see the whales in Connecticut as well.
Next time, Nav. Next time.
So before we get into the meat of this discussion, this podcast and all of our YouTube is brought to you by DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of THPN. New customers, download DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use code THPN, bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets instantly. That's code THPN only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Get your baseball bets in. Will the Dodgers maybe make a run at Nolan Arenado? We'll see how that goes out and put some push for the playoffs there. But speaking of playoffs, we don't talk about playoffs for a long time for hockey, but we're talking about rookie faceoff. So we're talking about the beginning of the season. So rookie faceoffs kind of in September. Kings announced their the tentative schedule there, what's going to be going on, the 3 games. It's going to be in Vegas this year. I believe it's September 16th through the 19th. You'll have it'll be out there in Nevada. The Kings will play Colorado, Vegas, and then Sunday have a day off, and then they usually end with San Jose there. So some good teams, some up-and-coming prospects maybe on the San Jose side that would be interesting to see there. Russ, you went there last year and been done it a couple times. What can fans expect if they want to make the trip out to Vegas other than copious amounts of booze and probably losing some of their rent money?
Yeah, it's the rookie faceoff is a lot of fun. It's almost like your precursor to the start of the NHL season or the training camp. So, especially for the Kings the last few years, right? You get Quentin Byfield, Arthur Kaliev, all their top prospects that have kind of come up in this tournament, kind of get to show how good they are against their peers, like those same type of rookies, just kind of fringe NHL players kind of getting the feet wet in the NHL. So, I love it. I went there last year into San Jose. Obviously, Brent Clark put on a show there with his walk-off shootout goal. That wasn't actually a walk-off, but so that was pretty fun. And then I went the year before in Arizona. So, yeah, this year it's in Vegas. They're playing at two different arenas. I think it starts the 15th. And they're playing against the Sharks, the Coyotes, and the Ducks, which is actually pretty cool because I don't think they played the Ducks last year. And
I'm looking at the wrong article. Good call there. Good call.
That's all good. No, how the Ducks have their top prospects. So, Brent Clark, I would expect him to be in the lineup for some of these games, if not all of them. Eric Portillo, obviously, probably get him some good looks against some of these other teams. So, yeah, I'm excited. We just saw Logan Cooley sign his entry-level deal, so maybe he'll be on the team for Coyotes. So you get a lot of competition with some of these teams going over there. So it's a lot of fun, and I think it'll be a lot more fun that it's in Vegas this year too.
Yeah, especially when the rosters get announced, to be able to kind of see a little bit more and kind of hone in on a couple of more guys. I think it's hard not to really want to get a good look at what Eric Portillo can do. As he heads into his first pro season, I think there's going to be a lot of eyes on him. I think there was really Russ at Dev Camp too, right? It's a little bit of a different setup, but I think that there's going to be a lot of eyes on him. And listen, if Brant Clark's there, he's going to be the headliner, at least for the LA Kings, of course. Like what he did last year, what some of the stuff that he's shown in Dev Camp, he looked pretty impressive at times. So I think it's still exciting because the Kings are getting out of this phase of like being one of the high-end farm systems because they've been building and building and building it up. So these have been really exciting to see over these last few years. And while the farm system is still good, yet some of these players we could see making impacts really soon. So I think it makes it really exciting.
It's weird though, because there's like the names in the Kings. I mean, obviously we know about the Kings system right now, but they're not necessarily the flashy names, like the Quentin Byfields or mm-hmm. like Alex Kirkots or all these Arthur Kaliev, all these names that right. national writers get to grab the headlines or whatnot. So, but for us, we see like Martin Kromyak, Alex LeFerrier, Francisco Pinelli, like all these really good young players that are still like maybe middle round draft picks. Kromyak was a fifth rounder, LeFerrier is a third rounder. So you see all these like players that maybe don't get as much notice around the league. But from everything we've seen, in their college times with LeFerrier or just in juniors or even in the AHL with some of these players, they're starting to make some noise. So I think some of these players, they have it in the back of my mind, especially with the way that the roster's shaken up, there seems to be some roster spots possibly open from that fourth line. You never know. Maybe a Martin Kromyak competes for one of those spots. And we've seen LeFerrier. We know the name Pinelli too. So I'm excited. I think a lot of players have that in the back of their mind when they go into these games too.
I feel like some of these later first, like you're again not your Turcotts, your at the time Velardes or Byfields and these guys, but this next crop of like Kromyak and Pinelli, LeFerrier, it reminds me a little bit of like which one of these may turn into something. It's like which one of Fagimo and Kapari is going to turn into something. These aren't like the top prospects, but they're the next wave, the next batch, if you will, the next tier. And we've started to see flashes from Kapari. Obviously, he ends up getting traded. We've seen flashes from Fagimo, particularly in the AHL level. And are we going to start to see some similar, which one of these next guys takes that next step and can they make that next step to be an impactful player in the NHL? I think that's what's kind of intriguing is, is you've got this group of like the next tier, but you're also like, okay, we need Byfield to take a step. The Kings need Kaliev to take another step. Clark, is he going to make the roster? So there's kind of questions at both ends of the spectrum, really, from the elite prospects, but then that next tier. And then as you go down the list, we talked about Portillo a little bit. We'll talk about him later too. Like it is intriguing this time around. It's different, I feel like, but it's intriguing.
I'm excited to see that these guys are going to be the next wave. It's not the excitement of the high names. I mean, obviously people are going to be there to see Fantilli or Logan Cooley or those types of names. Right. So, or I know Carlson went to Anaheim. So Leo Carlson. So, you know, those types of names that we had with Byfield, but you know, these guys are going to backfill this roster, you know, in 2 or 3 years where you have some guys like Victor Arvidsson is going to be dropping off. You're going to have the Trevor Moore after 5 years. Where is that going to be there? You know, is Deneau going to sign another contract? So are we going to have a center that's going to come and move his way up? We always need scoring. So, you know, a lot of these guys are, I know the excitement has kind of went from what can we get for these old prospects we're doing a rebuild? Who do we draft? What do these kids look like? When are they going to play? How often are they going to play? Oh, now the team's competing and you're kind of forgetting about the prospect pool, but these players are going to be relied upon to carry and maybe sustain the window that's being opened up by this current roster. And I think it's going to be quite interesting to see where that goes up because as we know, we haven't had the best success with the top picks yet. Still plenty of time for those guys to grow in and score. But the second to fourth rounders and these guys that are going to be backfilling this roster are just as important. I'm going to ask you guys a question here. I mean, you look at, I think it was last year, maybe it was 2 years. I think it was 2 years ago. Sean Durzi was one of the older players came in. It was kind of unexpected. And so like they've done it a couple times where they maybe had an older prospect that's gotten some, you know, maybe some run in the AHL. What prospect or player would you guys like to see maybe go there, maybe be a captain and kind of see what he's got?
Well, I think the obvious one would be Brant Clark, but I want to see what Samuel Hellenius can do. Cause I think this is a player obviously who's had already a full pro year under his belt. So, I mean, he's going to be one of the bigger players, if not the biggest player at this rookie faceoff. So I want to see him go in there and throw his weight around, like show that force and some of that aggressiveness that we've seen at times with the Ontario Reign. I mean, because, I mean, at Dev Camp, it's hard to really be so physical, especially with your own teammates. I mean, we saw it at times. But I think now that he has a chance to kind of go up against players of somewhat his age group, I think it'll give him a little bit more confidence to show that aggressiveness, show that sandpaper that we've seen from Samuel Hellenius. I mean, this is a player that has dropped the gloves against professionals in the AHL already. He's had a couple of fights under his belt. So I'm curious to see what he does and maybe shows a little leadership too, because this is a player that I think the Kings are really high on. I mean, they envision this player to be a bottom six center for this team in the near future. So whether Blake Lizotte leaves or you mentioned Phil Deneau's contract's got a couple more years left, I think 3 more years left. So who knows? Maybe Samuel Hellenius is a bottom six center of the future. And I'm curious to see what he does here.
I don't know the likelihood just from an age standpoint of these two guys being, well, age and health standpoint of these two guys being able to participate. So if you think I'm off base here, Russ, but Alex Turcotte is one. And Akil Thomas for me is a player that I just, Nev, I agree. I mean, I still think this kid is a really, really good talent and he just hasn't, similar to Turcotte, hasn't been able to just stay healthy. But boy, I would love to see Randy. You're talking about somebody that's a little bit older, kind of be that veteran guy. I really think that could be somebody like an Akil Thomas. I think he's a guy that's capable of wearing a letter. If he can stay on the ice, if he can get on the ice and stay on the ice health wise. So I don't know if he's somebody that would be at this particular weekend. He's certainly somebody here in the as we head into the season, preseason, that I'm going to have my eyes on is Akil Thomas.
Yeah, I'm curious. I'd be curious if those two actually made it. I mean, obviously, I think they're obviously older than probably a lot of the players that are going.
Right.
But with all the circumstances surrounding them, I mean, Akil Thomas didn't play hockey all last year. Obviously, Alex Turcotte hasn't played hockey since he was 12 years old. So you have a lot of players that kind of could be borderline making this team. I would like to see them play because, I mean, obviously you want to see them back on the ice. I know Turcotte and Akil Thomas are both skating, and they're both – it seems to me that they're both 100%. I think Akil Thomas is actually training in Ontario, and I've seen video of Alex Turcotte actually training with his off-season group. I think it's in Michigan, so – or Wisconsin, I'm not sure, but yeah. So both of them seem to be relatively healthy. So it'd be nice to see them in these games because a lot of Kings fans, like ourselves, have a lot of confidence in these players.
And I think Randon's point, and I don't want to speak for you, but like you mentioned, these guys that are a little bit older and maybe taking the reins on a leadership role, maybe that's something that it gives them the opportunity to do that where they really haven't had the need or the chance or the experience or whatever to do that in the AHL because there's been veterans around and maybe this is an opportunity for them to kind of be given that leadership role. And I think that's an interesting thought, Rando. I don't know if you had somebody else in mind.
No, I mean, Turcotte was my one. And I think it would be interesting to pair him with Akil Thomas. Cause you saw when they did let Byfield come and Durzi, there's three games. They played two out of the three. So, you know, if Turcotte's the captain for game one, Akil's the captain for game two, and then you have both of them in game three because there's that day off, you know, I think that could be something that works on. Maybe you have another more veteran presence on the blue line with Brent Clark, not necessarily Jordan Spence, but Kim Nousiainen's a little bit older. He's played multiple games in the AHL. Maybe you bring him in to kind of help a lot of the Europeans along, you know, kind of see what's going on there, have maybe more of a European leadership group in that time frame. But I think it's going to be good for them. I mean, you play two games, you're there with your boys, you're able to bring along and show that leadership role. Obviously Kings brass is going to be all the way around looking to see what they are, and I'm sure they know exactly where Akil and Turcotte are in their health. You know, this is a very well-run organization, but you know, it'd be nice to shake some rust off. And you know, for both those guys, Turcotte and Akil, get some confidence going into camp. Right. I mean, Turcotte,
get some game action.
Yeah. Get some confidence going to camp, get some game action. You know, I think they're both long shots to make the roster right out of camp, but they both have potential to play during the season, especially the fact that we're not going to be able to be carrying multiple people on the bench. You're going to have to see a lot of guys moving up and down. And Russ, you might know more than I do if they are able to move between both. I'm not 100% sure where their contracts lie off the top of my head, but I think it would be interesting and a confidence booster. You look at like that season for Durzi, came in, dominated that entire tournament, showed what he was in the AHL, and then got more than a cup of coffee in the NHL. And then it was like, oh, well, like Durzi's arrived. Like it was just nothing but a confidence. And he just built a season in a matter of months. And both those guys, Akil and Turcotte, definitely need the booster. Injury plagued, both had really high moments in the World Juniors, and we haven't really seen anything from them since after that. And it's been nothing but rehab and you know, will they ever do it talk, which I'm sure, you know, I'm not sure how online they are, but it's got a weigh on their mind. They're professional athletes. They want to be out there on the ice.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned Sean Durzi. I remember 2 years ago at that Arizona tournament, he was one of the best players on the ice. I mean, it seems like every time he was on the ice, the puck was on his stick and was going into the opponent's net. And the funny part about that is he was actually paired with Jordan Spence, with Spence playing the left side at that tournament. Yep. So maybe that's a little bit of foreshadowing to come for this NHL season. I don't expect Spence to be going into this team as much as I'd love to see him play and kind of dominate me, much like Sean Durzi did a couple years ago. But, I mean, yeah, you kind of get these players who kind of gain a little confidence from these games and these showings to kind of show management to be like, hey, look what I've done in the offseason, look where I'm at, and maybe give them, hey, if there are some injuries, like you mentioned, like Randon, if maybe an Alex Turcotte or Akil Thomas, like, and either one of them, you're right on the nose there. If any of there's injuries in the NHL lineup, let's say Akil or Alex light the world on fire in the AHL to start the season, who knows? They could be the first ones getting a call up. I mean, because they're both on relatively, I think, league minimum deals, so it's not going to be that much of a hit to the salary cap. So yeah, it's definitely a fun weekend. If anyone can make it out there, I'll be out there. So I'm looking forward to it.
something that's I think a little interesting too when you talk about Akil Thomas, and I'll include Fagimo and Laferriere in these conversations. We've talked about the lefty heavy LA Kings forward group, and how they're like, they've struggled to find right-handed shooters, right-handed forwards. And, you know, perhaps that's something to where that gives Akil Thomas a little bit of a leg up. If he's able to maintain some sort of health and string some things together, have a good start, him being a right-handed shot, Fagimo being a right-handed shot. Again, just something that I don't know how much will play into it, but it certainly doesn't hurt given the lefty heavy lineup that is the LA Kings forward group right now anyways.
Yeah, I'm gonna kind of put this up here, and I think a lot of Kings kind of maybe feel the sentiment. Tom comes in after all the hype of all the draft picks for the past 5 years. Remind me who's actually made the roster. They've all either not fulfilled on their potential, injury ridden, or traded away for better. And I'll start this off. I think you're looking at you look at as cold as this is about to sound, these are assets for the team to maneuver to make the team a better organization, whether they fulfill their need or their promise as a player, or they're traded for an asset that comes in and makes the team better. Brock Faber, excellent. He improved his draft stock from a second round pick and got our best offensive weapon on the team in Kevin Fiala. You look at Gabe Vilardi, finally had a good season. We move him away to get a number 1B or 2C, whatever you want to call him, Pierre-Luc Dubois, and hopefully that helps for the future there. So, and then you've had people that come in and play key minutes. Jersey played key minutes for the last two seasons for the Kings, was moved to the left side. Right, you have Jordan Spence was a fourth rounder, came in AHL MVP or all first team or whatever, and played significant minutes down the stretch and in the playoffs. I mean, so this team, yeah, you're not seeing the Calder Trophy winners, which you might see one this year in Brent Clark, but they're starting to piece together some of these things. And I think the fact that the Kings wanted to win now, and you brought up the Ducks. The Ducks tore it down and had a completely different strategy to their rebuild than the Kings did. The Kings wanted to win again with Kopitar. So I think what you're looking at, yeah, we all want to see the top picks play. I mean, Byfield played on the first line for over 2 months. I get that. And there's a lot of people out there, me included, who says, you know, like if you look at the stats, if Turcotte doesn't play over 850 games as a number 5 overall pick, it would be a failure compared to the average, right? So it's just different stuff like that. You got to take it for what it is. Is it a bad pick? Have they not lived up for fulfillment? Are they only 21 years of age or less for most of the prospects on our roster? You could probably say yes to multiple points of those. But the team right now is in a position that they want to win. And NHL is not a developmental league for the Los Angeles Kings like it is for the Anaheim Ducks. So, you know, as sad as it is, and I'll probably see Brent Clark in the AHL, even though I want that train up in the NHL, it's just where the team is at the moment. I've come to peace with it. We'll see how it works out. I mean, but you look at all organizations do this, right? The Dodgers had one of the best. Verdugo was one of their top prospects. He's untouchable. We'll never trade him away. He's going to be a phenom. And then they move him for Mookie Betts and they win a World Series. So it just really depends on what you define as successful. And so I think success is, did their stock benefit the team in any way? And I think for a lot of these players, it has.
Well, the thing that's difficult, or you have to remember too, I mean, if you think back to it, Alex Turcotte drafted in 2019. Obviously, I don't want to say it's been a bust yet because the myriad of injuries he's gone through, it's kind of.
I'll say he's been the worst first round pick in that draft so far.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, in terms of at least top 15, top 20 players, I mean, you could have gone a number of different directions, but I'm not writing off Turcotte yet as much as we joke about it or whatnot. I mean, it's tough because I mean, it's. If you feel bad for the player, because you can tell he's just a competitive player, and the injuries he's sustained. I mean, just that crushing hit by Andreas Englund, who's actually now on the Kings, is I mean, those type of things just happen in hockey. And I don't know, maybe he just has to get bigger. We'll see. But I'm not writing off Turcotte. But the thing you have to remember is, I mean, with Quentin Byfield, a lot of these players that they were talking about with the Kings prospect pool was right during COVID. I mean, COVID took a huge hit to some of this development of some of these players. I mean, you didn't have a lot of that scouting who would be there at the rinks talking, or a lot of development for these players who'd be at the rinks with these players. So there's a lot of that over the phone. Communication probably wasn't there as it would be before COVID. I mean, if you think about it too, I mean, Quinn Byfield, number one pick in 2020. Helga Grenz, number two pick that same draft. Like, traded away, whatever. Maybe didn't really live up to the hype, but you were able to kind of attach him to a piece to get rid of some salary. So you got a little bit of value there. Brock Faber, like you mentioned, you got Kevin Fiala for Brock Faber. That's a win in my book. I mean, if I can trade a second-round pick for a top 10 winger in the NHL, I'd do it in a heartbeat. And Kasper Simon-Tyval, that same draft. Alex Ferrier, that same draft. I mean, so there's still players percolating. And you look at the 21 draft, there's only four players. Brant Clark, Francisco Pinelli, Sammy Hellenius, and Kirill Kursanov. All four of those players could be NHL regulars for the Kings in a few years. You never know. So it's really only that 2019 draft that we're looking at, and we're still waiting for Quentin Byfield, who's obviously the number two overall pick from 2020, to really become that superstar that we're all wanting him to become, especially with Tim Stützle, who was the third overall pick right after him, kind of becoming that superstar already. So I think if Byfield can hit, which if he has a really good season this year, maybe we start to hear a lot of those rumblings of the development or the draft of the Kings these recent years start to go down a bit, because I'm really high in Byfield. I'm expecting him to have a really good season, but it's also curious to think about.
I like this name here.
Yeah, Mike Anderson,
fourth round pick, signing the 8-year contract, is going to be there for almost his entire career. That's a successful pick in my book.
Yeah, you can't just look at the first round picks that the Kings have had. Look at all the other picks: Jordan Spence, obviously, Mike Anderson that we just talked about. So, yeah, but I mean, I'm expecting Quentin Byfield to have a huge year, but it's something to think about is that he's going to be in line for a new contract. So it's almost like, yeah, it'd be awesome to see Quentin Byfield break out to the 60-point season, but then it's like, ooh, I don't know if I want to pay him right now. Maybe you wait a little bit, and then you start breaking out after a couple more years. But, hey, who knows? I mean, if that's the pill the Kings can swallow, I mean, if Quentin Byfield wants to put up 60 points, I'd be totally for it.
I get the frustration, because I actually think it goes back to the Vilardi draft. It took him so long. I mean, this was a player that was untouchable for years in the prospect and trade talks and whatnot. And it took him years to really break through, because in large part because of injury. You look at similar to Turcotte. I think something Russ didn't mention is the number of injuries and COVID and whatever else that Quentin Byfield has had to deal with himself. So, I think the frustration is very fair, that I think we can be honest that they've missed on their top picks so far. I mean, again, the verdict is still out on some of these guys, but, Vilardi took a long time. He finally has a bit of a breakout year last year. He ends up getting traded, of course. Byfield, production-wise, it certainly wasn't there. I think that we saw a lot of signs last year, but production-wise, it really does need to come at some point. Otherwise, that becomes a concern. Turcotte, I mean, that's just been a miss to date. Like Russ, I like the player quite a bit, and I do think that there can be somebody – there can be a middle six player there. So I understand the frustration. We'll see if, again, as Russ mentioned, we look ahead – there's Byfield and Brant Clark as well, who, I we'll see where he starts the season. But, boy, he looks like the special talent of the entire bunch. Brant Clark looks like the one that is, like, the special one. Arthur Kaliev in this conversation, I think he's still a really talented player, still a really offensive threat that I don't think we've seen the best yet. So, I don't know. I totally get the question. I understand, especially when you see some of these other young players pop off and have big seasons within their first year or two. I get it. And listen, I think if for the Kings to be a team that is going to push for a cup, they're going to need somebody to do something, to step up and be that player, whether it's Byfield, whether it's Clark, whether it's Spence. They're going to need somebody that's a young player, Kaliev, be impactful on the roster. And I'm not saying like a 40 point impactful player. You need him, you need one of these guys or a couple of these guys to really start to put some points on the board and some production, because you know, it's players that are out producing and outperforming their contracts that help you go deep in playoffs. And right now they haven't quite hit on any of those guys necessarily from that aspect. But I think we're all still optimistic that will happen.
I would love to have a 60 to 80 point year for Byfield. I don't care what the contract comes in at. So we talked about it with the prospects. I believe in order for the rebuild to be fully successful, two out of the four main first round picks, Filardi, Turcotte, Byfield, and Brandt Clark have to hit. You would like to see that come from within instead of just trading everything away. But trades are a part of it, and that's what we'll get into with our next topic, Velarde's contract. But Velarde hit last season, was a breakout season for him. We were able to ride that and trade for an impactful centerman. So if PLD comes in, signed an 8-year deal, is effective throughout his contract, then I would say that Velarde pick was a hit because it allowed us to get a very well-impact player for the Kings. Obviously, the verdict is still out because PLD hasn't even been on the ice for the Kings yet for one game, let alone 8 years. So we'll see. That's a story that is being written constantly. But let's get into Velarde's contract here. A lot of fans are going to be comparing Russ, as you said it, you know, what is Iafallo and Velarde bringing to the table, I guess, and Kupari bringing to the table for the pretty much the same overall cap value as PLD is getting. So 2 years, 6.85. The cap hit is evenly spread in AAV over the 2 years at 3.437 mil. A lot of people were, calling me out of my mind that it's going to be 5 or more million. I said, I mean, I'm guessing 3 to 5. I wouldn't be surprised if it was 3 million if the team can't come to a bridge deal. This also lets him out before his UFA contract. So Velarde's obviously believing in himself to be able to come out and be a UFA and earn the big bucks if his scoring continues. What did you guys think about the contract and value for what maybe you thought was coming in and what Winnipeg's getting out of this deal?
I thought it was a little bit less than what I expected. I felt it was coming around like the one or $3.75, $4 million range. But I mean, I get the years, like we talked about it. I mean, bridge deal made all the sense in the world, keep his RFA status and then evaluate it. But I mean, if I'm Winnipeg, oh man, I probably would have wanted more of a long-term deal. I mean, you just had a player just leave. I mean, and you kind of look at what's going on in Calgary too. It certainly feels like if you have any kind of confidence in some of these younger players, I know it's really risky, especially for Velarde with his injury history. But if you have any confidence in some of these players that can be your star talent really for the perennial future, I would try to sign them to a long-term deal if I could. So, I mean, if I'm a Winnipeg fan, I mean, yeah, this is great for the next 2 years, but man, I'd be freaking out whether he's going to leave after that or after that contract's over or want to head out the door.
Well, apparently he's glad that he's in an actual, you know, hockey city, according to
everybody says that. They all say that.
Yeah, I think Russ, I want to say we both did like articles at some point in the off season and we kind of played around with projections and using Cap Friendly's armchair. And I think I had him in around 3.5 on a bridge deal. You might have had the same. I can't remember now. So I think what surprised me wasn't necessarily the term, or excuse me, was the cap hit. Was like Russ, I think I was expecting a little bit of a longer term deal. And I agree. I think if you're Winnipeg, fine, you kick the can down the road. I mean, you don't know. I obviously don't know what the conversations were like with Velarde and the agent and what they were looking for, what Winnipeg was looking for. But you have to be a little nervous if you're Winnipeg, knowing that this takes him to his UFA year. So it's certainly – and listen, if you're – I think this is great for Velarde to get a bridge deal like this, secure what, $7 million coming off a good year. You're dealing with injuries, so you got a little bit of security there. And then if you, as Randon said, you bet on yourself and you have a chance to hit it big in free agency, this could work out great for him. And he probably wants to say, you know, listen, I don't know what direction Winnipeg's going here. You know, maybe they could be a competitive team this season, depending on what else they do the rest of the off season. But you know, their goalie's on a 1-year deal. Scheifele's not got much left. So there could be more changes coming down the pike here. So whether that's this year or next year, perhaps Vilardi wants to kind of see a little bit of that out. So yeah, I'd be a little nervous if I was Winnipeg. And in terms of Vilardi with the Kings, I don't know what that, who knows? Just because he signed a two by 3.4 with Winnipeg doesn't mean that it was a 2x3.4 with Los Angeles. We just don't know what or if those even conversations even really took place and what where anybody stood there. So I try not to say, well, the Kings could have had him for that. I don't know that it's apples to apples. So I don't even know.
We don't even, like you said, don't even know if the contracts even had place. Maybe the Kings were like, oh, PLD is available. We'll talk to Vilardi after if we can't get this thing done. Like,
yeah, I don't know where any of that conversation even came from. I mean, people were like, oh, he never wanted to be here. I was like, I don't know or even thought that was brought up anywhere. It felt like a lot of that kind of animosity between the player and the team was just brandished about by the fans, just creating something because, yeah, oh, he got traded and all of a sudden he's talking crap about the fan base. I think he would just, like you mentioned, Randy, I think that Rob Blake had a player in mind and Pierre-Luc Dubois that he wanted to go after. So it's like, what's the point of talking to Vilardi if I'm possibly going to include him in a trade when I don't really have to re-sign him until like August? Yep. So, yep. Yeah.
I think you're right, Russ. And really, I think his comments were taken a little out of context, in part because I think they were kind of initially tweeted at first, not in completion. And then we saw the full quote. It really wasn't that bad. I think you're right, Russ and Randon too. He was like, you know what? I would suspect, at least per reports, and I apologize, like I don't know if it was Bernstein from the fourth period that had said that, you know, the Kings had really pushed or at least were interested in Dubois back when he was initially dealt to Winnipeg. And if it was a deal that Columbus wanted futures for, he would have been a King at the time. So the fact that the player became available again, I don't think that, you know, I suspect Rob Blake knew he was available well before this trade and these talks took place. Like, he probably knew that Dubois was available, you know, months ahead of time.
Yeah, he and Brisson are like best friends. Like, so yeah, of course.
When a girl you've had a crush on your entire life becomes available, you know, you don't let another guy snag her. You go out and get her, you know. I think that's what Rob Blake did.
And yeah, and it was Bernstein also that I think that it said that at least at the time, Dubois' camp and Vilardi, or excuse me, the Kings' camp and Vilardi's camp had not yet spoken, which, as Russ alludes to, that doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the world. And if there was no deal to get done with Dubois, then I suspect Vilardi probably does get done. And what I'm curious to see mostly for Vilardi is where he plays. I think he has been somebody that has, in my opinion, has struggled anytime he's been down the middle with the Kings, whether that's early on in his career where he's probably thrust into a 2C too soon, or even later as a 3C, he has been far better as a winger. So I'm really interested to see where Winnipeg plays him, because I don't know if we'll see, and maybe we will. Like, listen, I'm a believer in Gabe Vilardi's talent, so maybe he is still able to be a 2C in the NHL, and I hope that's the case because I'm a fan of the player. But I'm seeing second line
right wing in a lot of people from.
And if that's the case, I think they've got themselves. He's a top six winger in my. If he's healthy and he's got the right line mates, the right center, I think he's a player that can play second line right wing. I think it's a really good fit for him. If they're looking at him as a 2C, I don't know that we're going to see the same type of Vilardi that we saw production wise last year.
I look at this contract, and you guys said you were wondering about the term, and I think I think Winnipeg doesn't really know where they're at, and I think the 2 years could work out well for them either way, right? And let's if Vilardi owns up and is a 30 goal scorer, then you're going to be okay paying the guy, because you're going to see 2 years of production. Okay, those guys don't come around often. We're fine paying Vilardi. Let's get it done. Winnipeg will be the only spot he can get 8 years from. If he does well, but the team isn't doing well, if he plays well, but the team isn't playing well, and they're going to decide to retool, well, he's going to be what, 24, 25? Yeah, they could build around him, or they could sell him. I mean, 3.4 is not a lot for a team trying to win a cup. Trade him for multiple first-round picks or young prospect and a first-round pick. Get some pretty good assets for a guy that's probably going to score 25 to 30 something goals. I think it works out either way. I don't think Winnipeg's just going to let him go for free. So either they trade him away and he produces, they trade him away for futures, or he signs there and they get a, you know, 25, 30 goal scorer. And then if this is just a fluke season last season, you know, 3.4 is not a lot for two seasons. I think there's a lot of positives if you're a Winnipeg fan for this. I just know that just like Kings fans are kind of frightened by all this prospect not maturing, Winnipeg's fans are probably frightened by all these players leaving and, you know, for and not signing long term. So we'll see how it works out for him. I think a lot of people are always going to equate Vilardi with PLD because of the contract and the trade and everything like that and their futures. I kind of want to move this into PLD and his value of what he signed, because we just saw Sebastian Aho sign for 9.85, I think it was, for 8 years, right? So that type of player, PLD, where Vilardi is, that scale, that looks like the scale's going up. After seeing what Vilardi got and then maybe Sebastian Aho, where do you feel – do you feel any differently about the PLD contract?
I don't. No, I mean, Aho is – top player in this league, you know, or a top caliber player in this league. If he produced, his production isn't quite there, which is probably why he's 9.5 instead of 12.5. But he does everything well. So I think that's a deal that makes a lot of sense for him. And I think it is very reasonable that Dubois makes it, it comes in under that. And I just don't think it's apples to apples with Vilardi, because you're talking about a guy that's played really one season. You know, he's had injury riddled seasons in the past. He just hasn't been able to complete. He was sent down two seasons ago to Ontario. So he really just doesn't have the track record, I think, of years played that Dubois and Aho have had. So I don't know that he has a ton to stand on in terms of leverage for a long-term $5-8 million deal, does Vilardi.
I'll say this. The Pierre-Luc Dubois deal in the next year or so, we're going to be saying that's going to be one of the more valuable contracts on the Kings.
I believe that.
100%. I'm saying this player could easily put up 80-plus points this season. He was on pace for 90 points before the All-Star break with the Winnipeg Jets. The Winnipeg Jets were first place in the Western Conference. First place. They were the big surprise at that time. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, Winnipeg's in first. And then after the All-Star break, he was dealing with a little bit of a nagging injury. He kind of fell off a little bit. Same thing with the team. And what happened with the team? They fell off too. So he was really the motor that was that team. So, I mean, it's tough because, yeah, we've kind of beat this to the ground. I mean, Vilardi became such a fan favorite in his short time, just last year, for what he did. I mean, all the goals that he scored, the goal against Binnington against St. Louis, that was tremendous. But I'm telling you, Pierre-Luc Dubois, I am so excited for what we're going to see from this player on a team that he's never been a part of a team this good before. And especially playing it behind a Kopitar, playing in front of Deneau, where he can get those favorable matchups. Man, I'm the sky's the limit for Pierre-Luc Dubois. I'm projecting possibly 75 to 80 points this season for PLD, and I think it'd be something, like I mentioned, it would be something, a contract that we'll be talking about in a few years, saying it's one of the best contracts in the league.
Kings have a interesting triad here. You could be looking at a 40-goal scorer and 2-point-per-game players for $20 million total. So, you know, Kevin Fiala, PLD, and Kempe right there for the next three seasons. You got to have value when it comes to winning in the National Hockey League. You look at the Bruins, did it for a long time, right? Had Pasta, Marchand, and Bergeron all under 7.5, or I think it was all under 7, right? They signed them early. They got that production. And so I think for the next three seasons, you could be seeing some pretty good value, like you said, Russ, out of some key players on the Kings for those contracts.
I think sometimes people too often look at the ceiling as in the point production and assess the value of a contract to that and say, well, he's not worth it because of X. I try to look at it a couple of different ways, not only the points, but also the style of player. Does he drive play? Things like that. but also the floor and the consistency. And like, I think there's something to be said for, you know, over the course of the, of his career, I think Dubois is going to be, I think he's been a pretty consistent producer. He's been steadily in that 65-ish point range, I think, a few times in his young career. And I think if you're looking at from a floor, if you can bank that, then you assume as he gets older, he's in a better environment, he's going to be playing bigger minutes, power play, things like that, that that he's going to see more opportunities for production, where I think the floor matters just as much too. The floor slash consistency is maybe another way to put it, where I don't always look at what's the ceiling and what's the max he could be, but I think you have to consider what is the player, what can you count on from that player year in and year out. And I think that's a pretty safe bet with Dubois, that he's going to be a pretty solid and valuable player. It's just a matter of how much, you know, he can, as Russ says, gets to that 75, 80 point guys, or 80 point mark.
I mean, if anything, we'll be looking at that trade saying it's a win for the Kings, I think. I mean, I'm so high in it at the time. You pair him with Fiala for the next 6 years, man, that's going to be so much fun to watch. I mean, just to kind of one more thing on Velarde, and not to knock on the player because he's not part of the team anymore. Obviously, he was part of the trade. But one interesting fact I found about him is that going back to 2007, at 5-on-5, Gabe Velarde had the second highest shooting percentage of any Kings player going back to 2007. So you wonder if a lot of that was maybe due to the high-quality looks he was getting. Because, I mean, if you think about it, he's getting a lot of his goals from really nice passes from Kevin Fiala or Andre Kopitar. But he also has a lot of skill. So I'm not knocking on Velarde. I think he's going to be a really good player. Consistently top six player in the league, but that'll be something to watch to see how he contends with a team like Winnipeg, who like you mentioned, Joe, it'll be interesting to watch what this team does. And I'm going to ask you guys too. I'll start with you, Randon. Do you think Winnipeg is a playoff team next year?
I mean, they showed flashes of it, but they got rid of their center. I think the center depth is going to be the biggest thing. Obviously, you have Kyle Connor, 40 goal scorer. They're going to have plenty of scoring on the wing. They're going to have the center depth and the health. When you have a goalie like Hellebuck, you can definitely ride him most of the season if he eats up 50 games and stays healthy. So based off that, I mean, I think they're probably a wild card team is what I would say.
How about you, Joe? Yeah,
I absolutely think they're in the mix. I think that Central Division is really interesting. I still think Colorado's the class, but Dallas, I don't see – Dallas should be good again. I don't see why Winnipeg can't be in that mix to finish – in that 2-3 slot in the Central. Like, I don't know that Minnesota is any better than Winnipeg. Nashville, I know, has had an interesting off season, but I'm not sure I put them there. And I kind of agree with Randon. I think depending on how the centers shake out, because I think, you know, that's why it's possible that we see Velarde as a 2C, because after Scheifele, I don't know where Winnipeg goes there, but again, if there's a couple of ifs, like they need to, as Randon says, kind of get the center position shored up a little bit, depending on what they do there. They're going to need some of these defensemen that they've got, some intriguing young defensemen to kind of step in and play some roles, but they got a decent forward crop still. They've got an elite goaltender. And I think it's a division that's open. Like, I after Colorado, I don't know. I don't think that there's a definitive – I guess Dallas is probably a definitive in that top two with Colorado there. But, you know, I think they can be very much in that hunt for third in the Central or a wild card spot.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think
what's gonna drive what will create riots in Los Angeles is when Winnipeg makes the playoffs and the Kings don't, and we'll have a problem.
Right. No, but I agree. I think they'll end up being. I think they could contend for a wild card, if not be one of the wild card teams. Because I mean, if you have Connor Hellebuck, who knows? I mean,
I just wonder what else are they? And I haven't followed it closely enough to see if there's been anybody that's actually said anything. But like, is Mark Scheifele still going to be here? Or is he going to be traded still? I mean, it's still only July. You know, could he be out the door? I mean, I I've got a couple of Bruins fans locally here, and I was like, you know, I don't know how they make the money work, but if they lose those two centers and Bergeron and Krejci, I like Scheifele for as a short-term stopgap there if they can make that money fit. I don't know how they do that, but, you know, there's I just wonder if he's still somebody that could be on the outs. I don't know. I mean, it's to me, it would be a little – Wheeler's gone, Dubois's gone. It seems like they wanted to shake things up a little bit. Bonus is still there. I don't know the relationship between Bonus and Scheifele. I don't know. I feel like
Wheeler was the guy. Maybe. That's what it feels like to me. I don't know.
Maybe.
Yeah, I feel like Scheifele would have been gone by now if it was really that kind of if the disgruntled player between Bonus and was Scheifele. I felt like he would have been traded by now. So part of me feels like it was Wheeler.
That could be.
But yeah, and there's also, I mean, like Nav mentioned, like you have really good young players there. Cole Perfetti, who knows what he could be. Brad Lambert, who I was really high on in the draft a couple years ago. Like you mentioned, Billy Hanola, that defenseman who's a really good finish defenseman for them. So they have a lot of good young talent. So that'll be a team to watch, especially come trade deadline, because who knows, if they're kind of contending on the borderline, I think Connor Hellebuck's name will start coming up around the trade deadline. And that'll be the player to watch, whether they want to just keep it running and try to make that cup run, which I don't think would be the best idea, or they maybe try to move Hellebuck and see what they can get around the trade deadline for him.
They got Persuade. He's back too. So depending on what that on a potential Hellebuck deal looks like at the deadline, presumably they would get some sort of goaltender coming back. You know, we've talked about, you know, depending on what happens, if they make a Hellebuck deal that doesn't, who knows? Maybe they're still able to get hot goaltending for that final 20 game stretch and be just fine.
Have Arizona eat some of that cap space. So goalies has been the discussion all last season. It'll be the discussion all this offseason and all next season. So Kings decided to go with the bargain bin, the bottom of the barrel, cheap route. All three goaltenders are making in the million to $2 million or up to $2 million range, where last year they had $10 million total in goaltending. So definitely a different feel there. I think they're relying on to hopefully one of these three get hot. Maybe we can split it out to, you know, 35-35, and maybe Rich gets 10 because of maybe an injury here or there, and we can get somebody to get hot at the right time for the playoffs, unless a move is going to be made there. But I think it was I forget who put the poll up on Twitter. Joe, you were in that discussion as well. You know, where is there a prominent way for the Kings to get their next goaltender? Is it going to be through draft and development? Is it going to be through free agent? Or are they destined because of the cap to bargain hunt for the next foreseeable future? And is there a proper way to build a team? And I think it's an interesting discussion. Joe was in there, and I think I don't know if Russ, if you commented or not, I got in there, commented, and left. So, but we'll start with Joe, since I know for sure you were in there, Joe. What did you select, and where do you kind of see the future of the goaltending for the Kings?
I selected trade UFA, but the way I approach it is, I don't want to get into the situation. I think the Kings just happened to be in this because they had Quick for so long, right? But I think it's a mistake to say the Kings need to find the goalie of the future. I don't like that conversation, because I think that there's just unnecessary pressure on any goalie, whether it's Portillo at the moment, who's the top prospect in terms of a goaltender for the Kings, or anybody else that they sign or trade for later on. Whereas, like, I look at it as let's have the team look at it in a like 2 to 3 year window. Whereas let's see how things kind of play out. Like, in the meantime, you draft, you throw your darts, you know, you draft a couple goalies, you make a trade like they did for Portillo, you maybe sign a couple of college free agents.
Your Hampton Slukinskis.
Right. And you see, let's see how those hit. And in the meantime, like, I think in a perfect world, you know, they would have been able to do something a little bit better than the Copley Talbot Riddich trio that they have at the moment. But I think all things considered, it's workable right now. And as you look ahead to next year, I don't think the UFA market is very rich right now in goaltending. It's like the one that I look at is Ilya Samsonov. I'm a big fan of his. I know he just signed a 1-year deal to stay in Toronto. We'll see what happens there. Obviously, the big name is Hellebuck, but personally, I'm not committing the term and the AAV that it would take for a goalie of his, you know, what'll be his age as he hits UFA next year. So I think it's going to be probably somebody that they acquire in a trade. But I guess what I mean by that is it's not as if they're going to go trade for Connor Hellebuck and he's the goalie of the future. You know, maybe it is, you know, if Nashville crumbles and UC Saros becomes available or if Thatcher Demko becomes available. But again, these are all like 2 to 3 year kind of windows. And I think that's fine. And then maybe after that, you get to the end of that 2 to 3 years, you evaluate, is it, were we keeping this particular player? Are we going in a different direction? Is somebody in the system built is developed enough to be ready to kind of take the reins and kind of hop into the NHL? So I just don't like the idea of how do the Kings find the next future goalie, because I just think there's a lot of different avenues to go. And I don't think a team really needs to do that anyways. I think, you know, even recent history, looking at some of the cup winners, whether you look at Vegas, you look at Darcy Kemper in Colorado, like I don't know how necessary it is these days. So I would be hesitant to like try to put my eggs in a basket of goalie of the future is X, if that makes any sense.
This sounds weird, but it almost feels like, I mean, what have we said? What have I said in the past? What have we talked about in the past? You should be very familiar with this type of conversation, Joe, right? It's like you run that player to the ground and then you get rid of him, right?
Yes.
Sounds like your friend Saquon Barkley over there in New York Giants. I mean, this is what we've said, right? The goalies are now NFL running backs. And look what's going on in the NFL. These running backs are coming in, lighting the world on fire, and the team just doesn't want to pay him anymore.
Wholeheartedly agree with that.
Yeah, and this is kind of what we're seeing with the NHL is, I mean, you think about it, Carey Price, what's his contract? What was his contract, like $11 million?
I think it was $10 million.
Sergei Bobrovsky got a $10 million deal. What did Sorokin just get, $8 million? We're seeing these values of these goaltenders start to go down a little bit, and maybe the importance of that position maybe go down, or maybe I can almost say go down, but maybe be a little bit more underappreciated a little bit. And it's not just because that you can't, if you find a good goaltender, you're not going to be good, because obviously you have Andrei Vasilevskiy, you can win a Stanley Cup any year, but those goaltenders are so hard to find. And we've seen, especially out here in LA, we saw Cal Peterson light the world on fire for a year and a half, then all of a sudden fell off a cliff. And the Kings were stuck paying him for 3 years at $5 million a year and had to pay a premium just to get rid of him off the salary cap. So I'm with you, Joe. I mean, I'm to the point where if the Kings want to sign a goaltender every other year to a 2-year deal, go ahead.
It's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, it's getting to that point. Because unless you can really draft a player, the next Jonathan Quick, where you don't have to worry about the goaltending position for the next 13 years, then that's great. But at this point, I'm not paying Connor Hellebuck more than $8 million a year, especially at he's going to be 30, 31? I mean, Thatcher Demko, who knows what his deal is going to be, but he's got a couple more years left at only $5 million. So maybe that's something the Kings look toward. But besides that,
the way to do it,
goaltender, I think the Kings are in a really solid position this year. Just shore up the defense, and I think Phineas Copley. And I've been looking – you know what I've been looking for? I can't find it. I've been looking for that Phineas Copley Vezina future bet, because I would love to put just a small amount of money on it, just in case. Yeah. You never know. Maybe Phineas Copley starts 60 games. The Kings go on this crazy run. Look at his win loss record last year. It was like 25-6. Yeah. If he plays 37 games and he goes like 28 and whatever, and has like a decent GAA and a decent save percentage, put him in the Vezina conversation. Who knows? But yeah, I mean, It'll be interesting to watch, and maybe have the goalies have their own little Zoom call in the next year or so. Well,
I think what you do is you have to take your shots in the system, because those guys are team and cost controlled for years, right? So the quote unquote goalie of the future, or whatever, is I guess inevitably going to come from the system if it all pans out, because again, you got these guys that are under team control for years, right? For 5, 6, 7 years, depending on when they come in. So that makes a lot of sense. But in the meantime, because they are so young and these guys take such a long time to, in general, to develop, I have no problem going, like what you said, 1-2 year deals. It's kind of like Carolina Hurricanes route. And I have no problem with that. Toronto's kind of done it. And I guess the argument can be made that these teams didn't win cups. But again, look who's just won cups the last couple of seasons. And I don't think it's really I think that is a smarter way to go. If you are able to draft, develop, and identify the guy, like you look at Saros as the guy, Hellebuck was the guy, Sorokin, Vasilevsky, but there's only a handful of these that are really there. Ottinger in Dallas is another one. Shesterkin, obviously, with the Rangers. So that's what, 6-7 goalies I just named? There's 32 teams now. How many teams are there? 32 teams now in the NHL. So there's not that many of these guys. So it can be a bit of a carousel. I have no problem until you can develop one of these players. And really what works out is, you know, it took a while for these guys to kind of evolve into who they are, but you can do that when you're cheap RFAs and under entry level deals, and then RFAs and under team control. So that's why they're able to then sign these guys a little bit later on. But I don't go out of my way to overpay. Like the Korpisalo contract from Ottawa is just terrible. Just a terrible contract. And same thing with Tristan Jarry. It's a terrible contract. Those aren't guys that I'm doing that for. When you can, I'd rather have Talbot at the price that they were at, as crazy as that might sound. So I'm with Russ right now. 1-2 year deals, unless something changes in the trade market, because otherwise, like I mentioned, the UFA market is thin. Somebody's going to pay Ilya Samsonov $5 million for 5 years next summer. Yep. Something like he makes 3.5 million, I think, now.
He makes two, I think.
Did he just sign though?
He just maybe I don't have the. Oh yeah, 3.5. It did update. Okay.
Well, you want to hear something funny? So there are 8 goaltenders who make $6 million or more next season. I'm going to name them for you: Jordan Binnington, Jacob Markstrom, Connor Hellebuck, Matt Murray, John Gibson, Andre Vasilevsky, Sergei Bobrovsky, and Carey Price.
Two of those are worth it.
I'd have two. Give me two of those. I mean, I haven't even mentioned.
But even Vasilevsky, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. But no, yeah. I don't know if you heard what he said. He said after, I mean, obviously I would take it after the amount of cups that they won. But one, does the Lightning win cups without the LTIR at that point? Probably not. I mean, that's not a really debate question that you're going to put. So it afforded them the opportunity to pay Vasilevsky the price that he got. But two, he said, I was burnt out. I mean, obviously I would, you know, I it's 60 games every single year and then going deep in the playoffs every single year. Like I just, my body gave out on me. And so like, I just think that a lot of more teams are going to look at that and the rigors of the season and what these athletes put their bodies through. You heard multiple goalies say that they lose 5 to 6 pounds a game, if not more, on sweat because of what they do. And so to put your body through that rigor consistently, I think you're going to see a lot of teams go to a 60-40 split and get two goalies. And I don't want to see the Kings do the bargain, this bargainy every single year where three goalies are $3.5 million. But I think the sweet spot is two goalies at about 5 to 5.5. And total? Really have – total. Yeah.
Okay.
And really – because – you're looking at some of the like Fran, I think, is it Francou or Francois?
Francois, like
He's $2 million, right? And he put up some solid minutes for Colorado during their run. And so I think that we're at 2 to 3.5. Maybe you have a guy that you have in mind to take the 60 part, but if you need to, the other guy is right there. And you roll that back and forth. you know, we'll see how it works out. And like you're looking at some, you know, Aaron Rodgers just took a discount to win. So maybe some of these goalies are going to see, hey, like the only teams that are going to be able to pay me $8-10 million, I'm going to be our crap teams that I'm going to have to go to, or teams that are in the middle, right? If I really want to win a cup, maybe I'm going to have to sign for $5 million. And if Hellebuck signs for $5 million, that's a steal, right?
It's a different story.
That's a different story because he wants to go for a cup. Now, I'm not going to ever fault a guy to go get his bag. If he wants to go and play for a crap team and get $10 million a year, hey, that's his life. Good on you. Spend that money. But I think, like you guys said, for the Kings, and maybe a lot of teams feel this way, $5-5.5 million is like between two players, and maybe you sign a third goalie to $1 million, you know, a little over $1 million contract. I think that might be the sweet spot where you're seeing, like I said, I don't want three goalies at $3.5 million or whatever it is, but I think you can find something there, and the cap will go up, but how much? We also have all these prospects that aren't goalie prospects that need to get paid. So, you know, where is that sweet spot? I think it could come there. And I think that also you got to look at how rare is it that we found what Quick gave us. I mean, he's probably the best American-born goalie, and you know, you could arguably say top five, top 10 of all time, regardless of country. So two cups, and towards the end of his career was still putting up quality minutes at a very cost-controlled contract for what it was, which was what I think it was right around the $5-5.5 million, right? So you were getting that type of production, and maybe that's where, like you see, Joe, is the goalie of the future comes from the prospect pool within. He puts up two or three seasons in a row at a cost control number, and then the team's like, hey, you want a $6 million for 6 year type contract? And then maybe that looks enticing and not dumping the 10-11 mil mark. But you don't need to go out and find that guy, right? I mean, you don't need to go out and find him. The best running back to win a Super Bowl in the last 5 years was Leonard Fournette, and he got paid $2.5 million. So it's he had the pedigree, but he didn't have the contract at the time that he won the Super Bowl. So
I've been very much on that, as Russ alluded to, with the running backs and goalies comps. I really have been, just because you've got your handful of elites that are, when they can steal you games, they can win you games, but it's identifying who those are and when. Linus Ullmark just won the Vezina, guys. So it's like, again, do you consider him one of the elite goaltenders in the NHL? I don't. I guess I should. Should I? Because he won the Vezina. I don't put him ahead of any of those guys that I mentioned earlier. I don't know. I mean, I can't get there where I'm going to go out of my way to pay big money for a goalie. Brandon, I think you're right. There's got to be a sweet spot in a perfect world where the way the Kings are going right now, this is definitely taking hashtag goalies to the extreme. Part of me loves the hell out of that. I respect it. But it is a little risky.
There is a crystal ball or a Dr. Strange, you know, future that he looks into, and it's absolutely a dumpster fire in the space this year. So it's just, it's like, how far do you want to go to that extreme is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I mean, if you have a start of the year that you had last year, I mean, Rob Blake might have his hands tied. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, maybe that's why David Rittich is kind of that insurance policy, but I mean, it's David Rittich. It's not like, right, you have anybody.
The 23 or the 24, 23, 24 Phoenix Copley is David Rittich.
100%. So yeah, that'll be the thing that I'm most going to be fascinated with is the bidding war, or I mean, I don't know if it's going to be a bidding war, but the UFA signing period for Connor Hellebuyck next year to see what he eventually gets paid. Cause like people have mentioned, I think Holden just mentioned, he wanted that Vasilevsky type money. So, I mean, if this is really truly where the goalie market is going, like the running back market in the NFL, he's getting nowhere close to that type of deal.
Do we see teams or goalies, or do we see more of them go, because we saw a rash of these 5x5 type of deals. Campbell got one. It wasn't 5 years for Peterson, but he got three. Tristan Jarry just got a handful of years. Obviously, the deal for Corposalo. Or will we see the teams go like 1 year, $9 million for somebody like a Hellebuyck? And I don't know if either the team or the player would prefer that, but do we see him go a much shorter deal and get these guys paid if they want and let them just do a bunch of 1 year Trevor Bauer deals, 1 year deals making $9 million for these elite goalies. And they just are mercenaries going from team to team to try to win a cup.
Well, even if Randon mentioned, I mean, how many cup contending teams have $9 million to spend on a goal? I mean, but the thing, like, I kind of agree with you though, in that aspect, maybe at the beginning of the year, if Connor Hellebuyck wanted 2 years at $7 million, I'd think about it. You got 2 years. It's not that much of a risk. So I wonder if that's kind of the way they gravitate toward, as opposed to that 6 year, $7 million, six by six or something.
Or again, we sit here and say, well, are we changing? And teams are going to start to be a little bit hesitant on committing long-term deals at big money to goalies. And look what just happened. We just saw Corposalo and Tristan Jarry just get long-term deals, multi-year deals at pretty big money for, I would say, for what they're, you know, for them and what their skill sets are, in my opinion, anyways. So maybe not. There's always going to be one. And all it takes is one to pay that goalie 6 years or 7 years at $9 million per.
Teams are going to get desperate.
I still can't believe what Corposalo got paid. I mean, he's just being set up for failure with that Ottawa defense. I mean, as much as I love Chychrun, obviously, I mean, Jake Sanderson's great.
I love that Ottawa defense, though. I love it.
And they just signed Tarasenko. That's not
their defensive. Okay, their defense, the just pure defenders are good, but the way that team plays defense is not that good.
That will be. I mean, they definitely play a little bit more of an up and, you know, that a little bit more high risk, high reward type of style of play, I would say. Maybe that changes a little bit this year as they've kind of, because now I think the expectation is this is a team that can contend for playoffs. I think they can. I think they very much can. And you know, you mentioned the Tarasenko deal. I think it's a good fit for them. Again, 1 year, $5 million. Kind of replaces DeBrincat, if you will. I like the deal. I think this is a really good team. I love the decor. I like some of their young forwards. And yeah, the Corposalo deal, I mean, that's just, I don't know. I mean,
is it going to be another Edmonton situation where you have a rookie coming in and starting most of the games down the stretch?
Hey, that is not a crazy thought at all.
But you look at a team that got desperate. Edmonton was desperate with what they saw from Mike Smith, right? So
were the Kings. I mean, the Kings too.
And I'm glad the Kings didn't do something like that because yeah, you're right, Randon. They desperately needed a goalie, and good for Campbell on cashing in on that. He had a half a season in Toronto where he made the All-Star team and he cashed in on it. You know, Matt Murray's cashed in. I don't know what these teams or GMs are seeing in some of these guys to commit that. Like, again, if you're telling me Corposalo can be a $4 million goalie, I buy that. But for a five, why are you to commit that many years to him? It just – that I can't wrap my head around because look, as you mentioned, look what's happened with Campbell. Like, although I do think Corposalo is better than Campbell, but still it's just it's the years that get me with these goalies. Is the long-term commitment to goalies that are not top goalies.
The division they play in too is so tough, man. That's going to be, I mean, even with Boston losing Bergeron, I mean, that division is still just
a nightmare. Oh, yeah. No question. Because I think it's so fun though. I mean,
Detroit's going for it too.
Yeah. And I don't think they're as good though. I don't know.
I don't think so either. I mean, that DeBrincat deal actually made no sense to me.
I don't know. I'm not sure what they feel about Detroit, but I do think Boston comes back. I think Toronto could conceivably run away with that division. And then you got a lot of teams, I think, in that mix. I mean, Florida eked in last year. You know, Tampa, I think, is still going to be solid. But Buffalo's coming. if they can get some saves, Buffalo's coming. I think Buffalo and Ottawa are both really, really intriguing teams in the East.
Nav comes in here.
I have no idea the hell we just got on Buffalo and Ottawa for a second there in that division. But
the goalies. Nav coming here says, do you think a team pays a goalie because they have no defense and teams with good defense don't want to pay a good goalie? Like, do you think teams that, hey, like, our defense was sorry, we couldn't get a save last year, let's put a goalie in there, and they focus more on, hey, it was the goalie's fault, let's get a goalie? Or do you think teams maybe should focus on, hey, we need to have a better defensive structure? Or
I mean, that's like, kind of what Ottawa's – it seems like that's kind of what Ottawa's doing.
What Edmonton did, I think.
Yeah, too. Edmonton too. I mean, but it's not that's not the smart way to go. You need to have a good defense.
You're going to do that, you do it with a legit number one goalie, not Jack Campbell and Jonas Korpisalo.
I mean, even look at the Kings. The Kings are doing it right. I mean, if you're going to have the value goalies and the bottom of the barrel type goalies that they're going for, you need to have an Anze Kopitar, Philip Deneau, Mikey Anderson, Matt Roy, Vladislav Gavrikov. You need to have those players playing in front of those goalies in order to make them look like they're top goaltenders in the NHL. Because if not, then all of a sudden you're going to have Phoenix Copley going up against just onslaught of shots coming at him. I mean, the Kings were one of the best teams at limiting high danger chances in the NHL last year. So that's a lot of the reason I think that Rob Blake is going to this this gamble that he's taking right now.
But yeah, to your question, Randon, I think there's a couple of teams that have probably done that with Ottawa and with Edmonton, and I think it's a little risky.
I want to kind of bring this up with and maybe I'm wrong here, but the NHL has been out of the four major leagues, has been probably the least advertised. Obviously, the players make way less. Nobody's getting close to Mbappe money. What about that contract? Jesus criminy.
He turned it down.
He turned it down too.
Yeah. That's so crazy.
$774 million. But so like the players aren't getting paid this much. Obviously the ESPN deal comes in, but with more spotlight, more televised games, higher percentage of viewership comes with stardom and you look at Trevor Zegras on the cover of Chell, right? You have a lot of these guys doing more commercials and doing those types of things. Bedard got, I believe he got a stick sponsorship already and he hasn't even played a game. So like a lot of these superstardoms come with facial recognition and none of these goalies, they're all wearing masks. Right. And so maybe the money is going to start going because of the ESPN and the Turner Sports is going to start going more towards the heavy stars because as they should, they're scoring a lot of points and there really isn't going to be much stardom to advertise or to put your money behind when his face is covered the entire time.
I mean, I'm a little worried about where the NHL is heading in terms of that situation. I mean, these players seem like they're vastly underpaid compared to some of these other leagues. I get it that it's not the NBA or MLB or whatnot, but I mean, Jaylen Brown just got $60 million a year for the Celtics, and it's the highest paid player in the league. He's not even close to being probably top 10 player in the NBA. And when you have your best player and Connor McDavid, he's going to be making probably what, $13 million.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. I don't know when the CBA is up, but I'm worried. These players probably deserve a lot more than what they're going to get paid. And the salary cap is obviously limiting a lot of that. And there's COVID and whatnot, but man, if I'm these players, I'd probably be a little bit jealous of what some of these other players are making in other leagues. I think they deserve a little bit more.
I'm sure the CBA is going to be, obviously they're getting more money. How much more of that money is going to be going into everybody's pocket? I mean, you're looking at a lot of it's going to start to replenish what they lost during COVID, but that can only be used as an excuse for so long. You know, the NHL or the NFL has 8 games. I mean, obviously it's the most watched sport. There's fantasy sports, all that kind of stuff like that pumps money in. Basketball has the same amount of games as hockey. Right. And baseball has way too many games, but they get paid whatever they want to get paid. I mean, you're talking about almost $1 billion is going to be rumored for Ohtani. Right. So like there's got to be some change there. And I think the ESPN money is going to be something that, like you said, in the CBA, like how much more, like if we'll say if in the next 5 years, if the salary cap gets raised $15 million, what are centers like Austin Matthews making? 16, 17, 20 million? Like, is that where you see the game headed? I mean, is Bedard going to get the first $20 million deal like per year? You know, if the,
that's a good bet.
Right. I think it's something that's definitely going to be interesting to see how that goes. And if the, I look at ESPN's coverage of hockey is still not there yet. Like, you're looking at the Kings were the hockey playoffs were going on and they were talking about off season for basketball. And then now they're showing summer league games on ESPN instead of talking real stuff. Right. So it's like, you don't really see that a lot yet. Maybe that will get going and with time and what ESPN learns, but I like what you, your thought there, the CBA, like how much does this money really affect what these guys are going to get paid? Cause they put their bodies on the line just as much as football players do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, and also too, the MLS is grabbing a lot of viewership too, especially with Messi over here now.
Yeah.
Who knows who else is going to be coming over to America to play soccer, but it feels like the NHL, and I don't want to be that guy, but it feels like the NHL has kind of dropped the ball. And yeah, COVID definitely took a hit on that. But there could be a little bit more that can be done to market some of these players, bring a little bit more attention, eyes and ears to what's going on in the NHL, especially getting games. I mean, I know as Kings fans, we hate Connor McDavid, but I mean, as a hockey fan, I love him. And he should be shown as much as he can. I mean, you got to promote these star athletes that the NHL has. And just to kind of round out our Ottawa Senators corner of the podcast, what did you guys think of the Vladimir Tarasenko deal? What do you think, Joe?
I like it. I he's not a player I'm going to give a multi-year deal to. So I think 1 year is great. I think Ottawa needed somebody like that to kind of fill the net a little bit. I mean, he's not the player that he used to be, but I think it made sense for them, you know, when they lost DeBrincat to find somebody that can score and be a scoring winger. But I like it. I think it's probably a fair number too, really, the $5 million. I don't think that he's at this stage of his career should be commanding much more than that. I like it. I think that he's a type of player that I think they could have used.
How about you, Randy? What was your thoughts on the deal?
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, they needed a scorer. They brought one in, and I think you're looking at, we talked about it for the goalie market, these mercenaries. I think you might see a lot of these aging scorers be mercenaries as well. Teams are getting smarter, right? Look how, no offense to Brent Burns, but look how garbage that contract was, right? Like towards the end, like he's just getting paid an absurd amount of money and he's 38, right? So it's like, I think these players are getting smarter. I think these agents are getting smarter. Like, hey, look, I got to make my money now. Like, let's sign these 8-year deals, you know, for Stützle, get me out at 28. I can sign another 4 or 5 year deal with good money. And then because now you look at a lot of these aging scores at 31, 32, 33 are kind of like poking around the league. Unless you're a solid 2-way guy that can bring, you know, to a 200-foot game, like these snipers that are power play, you know, type players, you're going to be going around the league, you know, left and right. I mean, Phil Kessel still has a place in this league. Doesn't play any defense. He's a power play expert, scores goals, but like he's just going to get those 1 to 2 year deals for the rest of his life. I think there's going to be a place for players like that, and not only goalies, but for scorers as well.
I mean, I thought Tarasenko was tremendously underpaid. For me, if I understand he had a big injury, I forget what it was, it almost killed him out for a full year. Almost a year and a half, I think.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a 6-time 30-plus goal scorer, Stanley Cup winner. And I don't know, maybe he just is looking for 1 year, like kind of like the Gavrikov kind of deal, right? Where he's just looking for a short-term cash in again. But I mean, Tarasenko is only 31 years old. And from what I watched in the Ranger games, I thought he was one of the better players for the Rangers in the playoffs. So for me, I mean, if you can get Tarasenko, I would have loved, if I were the Kings or if I were any team, really, if I would have got Tarasenko for like 4 years at $5 million a year, sign me up for that. Especially with where the cap is probably going to go in a few years. That $5 million cap hit wouldn't look as crazy.
I don't think I would have done the 4 years. I think I would have been real hesitant at that. I think it's great that it's a one-year deal. I'm just nervous of the health of the player. He's had some – like those injuries were significant.
That's the thing too. Yeah. I mean,
I don't know offhand what he ended up doing last year production wise. And cause I don't know that, like, I don't know that he's, maybe he's got another 30 goals in him, another 30 goal season in him, especially, listen, they've got some skill and some players over there in Ottawa. You know, it's not just Tim Stützle and Brady Tkachuk. I mean, I love Josh Norris. I think he's a hell of a freaking player. They've got some talent and some young talent in there. And then, you know, so him on the flank, I think could work really well.
50 and 69.
What was that?
50 points in 69 games.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you. Yeah. So yeah, that's, you know, I think the numbers fair given his, what the injury he came off of and the production that he had this past season. Cause I don't love the player, but I do like this fit, I think, on a 1-year deal. I don't, like, maybe you could have talked me into two, but I'd be nervous committing too much to him. But certainly could work. If he scores 30 goals, that's a hell of a deal for Ottawa.
Well, it's probably what he's cashing in on, is hopefully go off this year and then cash in another deal next year.
Sure.
Well, appreciate you guys listening to the first hour of the Kings and the last 25 minutes of the Buffalo and Ottawa podcast. Thank you guys for being in the chat. Please smash that like button, hit that bell for more notifications of Kings content. Go on hockeyroyalty.com. Catch all our articles coming out. The season's coming up with the rookie faceoff. Any updates on injuries and everything like that will be here on our website. We got some gear on there, so please go out there and get your Hockey Royalty t-shirts and mugs and hats. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at @hockey_royalty, NHL Russell, JW Paterino, Kopitar 4HOF for all your rain coverage, and Rando Commando 24. Thank you guys in the chat again. Appreciate you guys always for being loyal fans of Hockey Royalty. And as always on this podcast, go Kings, go.